Man.
Logan was the first movie that made me as an adult man cry in a movie theater. It was heavy.
I did not cry at that.
Oh,
I thought that third act was absolute shit, but I enjoyed everything up to it.
I always like it's the tipping over of the cross part that every time I'm like, oh my god, I can't contain myself.
The first movie that made me cry as an adult was.
And Chris Hassan cried tears of joy when that part happened.
Yeah, he clapped in the theater.
He masturbated over fucking his Patrick Helen conversation.
Oh my god. So mass, got blades for days, got guns galore, got combo moves, evades and more, with bear traps and hand grenades.
Hello, welcome in, bienvenue, hello, and other versions of hello that I did not say that time. Welcome to Adventures in Pod Taste, the AIPT Comics podcast, the only place where you can find me. Actually, I think that's pretty much our sole claim to fame, because I know Dave is on other podcasts from time to time. My name is Jason. I will be with you for the next hour plus to talk about the Merc with the Mouth, the man with no tan, the guy who wears all red so you don't see his blood, just like the dude in the brown pants getting shot in the face. That's right. It's Deadpool is the topic of the conversation, as you probably are well aware if you're listening to this. Deadpool 2 comes out this Friday, and Thursday if you're nasty about it. And we're pretty excited here at Adventures in Poor Taste, and we wanted to enjoy some of our nerdiness with you guys on this part. Joining me, as always, is the cream to my coffee, the weasel to my Deadpool. Though realistically, you're probably the Deadpool, and I'm probably the weasel in this situation. It's Dave Hildebrand. Say hi, Dave.
What's going on, everyone?
Do you feel like that's our dynamic, that you'd probably be the Deadpool and I'd be the weasel out of the situation, or...
I don't know. We go back and forth each week on who would be what. There's some days, you know, where you shine and I just sit in the background and bask in your glory.
So then how about your weasel and I'm Bob from Hydra? We'll go from there.
There you go.
Joining us today, we've got the host of AIPT's YouTube extravaganza 5 and 5, which, as he helpfully points out, is never actually in 5. It is... Shoot, I forgot your last name already, Connor.
I just say Connor Christ.
Connor Christensen over here. Welcome What's back up, to the guys? Show, Connor.
Hi. I'm really glad we're not debating tonight, because I found out last time I'm really bad at debates. Yeah, so this will be good.
As long as you can remember which guy Dr. Doom is, we should be okay.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this is the first show you've been on since that? Or have you been on since?
No, this is my first one. I had to go into a reclusive hole for a bit and really rethink my life, and now I'm emerging stronger than ever. Hopefully,
rehab.
Yeah.
Hopefully, you'll have it all in time before they finish that that Doctor Doom movie that I think James Gunn said that they were working on. Somebody said that there was a Doctor Doom movie being in the works.
Wonderful.
Yeah, I'm actually excited about it. I think Doom's a pretty good character. But that the dulcet tones you just heard are. The self-professed big daddy of Adventures in Poor Taste. He is the editor-in-chief here at AIPT Comics. It's Russ Whiting. Say hi, Russ.
It's Whiting, and you can call me the biggest daddy now for that blunder. Your intro, though, I gotta say, was like a more genial Chris Hardwick, if I can say that. That was just great.
Oh.
I liked it.
To some, that might be damning praise, but I'll take it. I enjoy Nerdist, and I really prefer the podcast when he actually hosts to the ones that are just like Matt and Myra and the other guys. But anyway, as I said, we're here talking Deadpool. It's a pretty fun topic, I would say. I think all of us here are pretty well versed in the Merc with the Mouth, the man who loves chimichangas, the guy in the red pajamas, whom my nephew once called Evil Spider-Man when he found my old toys at my mom's house. I think that we were discussing it. At least three of us own Deadpool's first appearance. Is that right? Is everybody? Connor, are you on?
Roger.
I technically do. I bought the $1 True Believers Deadpool number one for when I was in New York once. I was like, oh, I'll grab this. Cool. And then read through it, and I was like, oh, I already read this story and have it in a trade. But yeah, I have Deadpool's first appearance in a single issue, yes.
But it's like one of those like Marvel or X-Men classics or whatever that they used to sell at like a drugstore for 75 cents.
Exactly.
I think those were the ones that were released when the first movie was out, right? Because they did a collection of four or five with more of the famous stories from the beginning.
Yeah, I think this one came out in March 2016. It's just a total reprint. It's kind of cool to have. Not really. It collects dust.
I mean, I think that what we were also discussing a little bit earlier when we were talking about the first appearance of Deadpool is that from the beginning, he was already kind of, well, literally a comics character, but an actual comic character. He was always sort of a joke, which I think is kind of funny because of how overtly he is a ripoff of Deathstroke the Terminator. Like, the names are similar. Their secret identities are, you know, basically like what a five-year-old would say. Well, fine, it's not Slade Wilson. It's Wade Wilson, you jerk. It feels like it was always it was a character that was never supposed to succeed. Why do we feel like Deadpool is here some like 20 plus years later and like the most popular thing? Well, wow, no, it's almost 30 years of Deadpool now that I think about it. But yeah, why do we think that he's survived this long? Why is this character still going and now making like the second biggest movie of the summer as the marketing goes?
Did you say your nephew called him Evil Spider-Man?
Oh, yeah.
How old?
He was 6 at the time.
Okay. Ironically enough, Spider-Man on crack is I think what drew me to the character in the first place. I would hear that description. I've tried to track that quote down, but I haven't been able to find it. But Spider-Man on crack, I think, was an apt description for him when he first started getting to his like real groove as a character. He's just frenetic. With Liefeld, though, he had tons of characters that were like Deadpool, just like slight variations on the secret identity. You know what I mean? Like, just take a dart and fucking throw it at any of his characters. There's Blood Wolf, Fighting American, which is just like a color palette swap of Captain America.
I mean, I think if you look back through like Liefeld's work over the years, you'll find that there are like 15 different pastiches of the same fucking characters. There's like a Wolverine on every team he draws. There's a Cable on every team that he fucking draws. There's like a Hulk on every team that he draws. He's just kind of a shit creator, if we're going to be honest here. The fact that he got lucky with Deadpool is, I think, it has almost nothing to do with Liefeld, really.
And yet he grasps onto the fact that he is technically the creator, even though he wasn't really what popularized the character as we know him today. Like, I think he's quoted a saying about Fabian Nicieza, and you can correct me on that, maybe like the character name, the creator name.
I've always said Nicieza, but I have no idea what the proper pronunciation is.
He basically said, he was like, oh, that was the height of the 90s. I created that character. He's like, basically, you could have hired a janitor to write him, and he would be as popular as he is today. So I'm not sure if that's his hubris. Or his like him just being a dickhead, or if there was something between him and Nicieza, but that's just an asshole thing to say.
Yeah, I mean, I lean toward the dickhead line just because I remember around the time that Deadpool would have been created, it was like around the time that he left for Image co-found Image with Jim Lee and such. And I remember thinking the first time that I thought the Image was a big deal was because they were doing this commercial for like Levi's 501 jeans, and he was like all up his own. I think my most creative ideas come when I'm wearing jeans. I'm like, oh, shut the hell up, Rob Liefeld. You were saying something.
I was gonna say just his comment about like, oh, a janitor could write Deadpool. It's just could not be farther from the truth, because there's some Deadpool comics out there that are bad and hard to read, and they're poorly written, and the jokes are awful. So I think what's made Deadpool so great is he really is, when it comes to his look, there's nothing that special. The red definitely stands out, but it's totally derivative of both Deathstroke and Spider-Man. But what really makes him memorable is the way he's written, and when a good writer latches onto him and really understands his irreverence and his complete lack of sanity, that's what makes him so good, and that's why he's been so popular for so long.
I mean, it's one of those things like the Joker. People think that because a character is crazy and funny that it's easy to approximate it and make it worthwhile. But you can go to any convention in this country and see that there are tons of people who do not know how to make Deadpool funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. They think, oh, if I just like knock things over and yell at people, I'm Deadpool and I'm funny. It's like, no, you're just an asshole.
Occasionally I say chimichangas. Whoa. Aren't I wacky?
Yeah, the ones that are killing me are the... Oh, I'm sorry, Bruce. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, he's definitely become flanderized over the years. Just like, I don't know if you can look that up on TV Tropes, is it? It's basically, they take the essential parts of what they think makes the character successful, and they just keep overexposing that aspect of the character. But I'd say the core of the character, as we know him, everyone will say Joe Kelly established pretty much the prototype of the character as we know him now.
Yep.
I'd say Fabian, though, set like the mold for him with Deadpool the Circle Chase in 92, I believe, or 93. And that was the first
Joe Madureira did?
Yeah, that was the first miniseries that really infused Deadpool with any sort of backstory, supporting cast. It made him more than anything that was just like a mercenary that showed up and they'd be like, oh, he talks a lot, and then they beat him up and then they ship him off. Cable actually physically mailed him back to his employer, who was Mr. Tolliver at the time.
Oh, it was Tolliver. Because Gideon also appeared in that episode issue where he debuted, didn't he?
Yeah. It was... it was like a Danger Room sequence. That was Gideon's appearance. And I think Deadpool's first appearance, Cable's actually in the library of the X-Mansion. And then all of a sudden, he just opens a book and Deadpool appears out of nowhere. And they fight. And then the X-Force fights him. And then it's like a six-page fight.
Yeah, and then we get Copycat Domino popping up. But yeah, the Circle Chase, going back to that... literally, like, what got me interested in the character, and admittedly, it's because I was a huge Joe Madureira fanboy. I really dug the art, and at first, it had that weird perforated cover where all of the letters for Deadpool stood out, and, like, he'd be, like, standing on the side, like, the bad guy Slayback, which is a stupid name, would be, like, popping up on the side. I always thought that was a really cool series. And then the follow-up to it, which Joe Madureira didn't draw. I think Roger Cruz did, who's the Ian poor Churchill, man's... Was that?
Ian Churchill, I think.
Ian Churchill. All right, well, it was a poor man's Madureira. And it was in that one, I think that they tried to make Siren into his love interest. I think that's one of the... Much like Wolverine, you find that Deadpool seems to get laid an awful lot for a guy who's bumpy and covered in tumors. It's just a weird little side thing that they've written. And I like better the way that they've done it in the film series, that they've stuck with the storyline behind Vanessa and have kind of made her his modus operandi for being who he is at this point. Do you guys feel like, of his supporting cast, that Vanessa is a good choice? Do you want to focus on other people? Can we see Bob from Hydra, who's my personal favorite Deadpool side character?
I think seeing Bob from Hydra would be super rad. I kind of want to see him do more with Weasel, though, because in later comics, especially in Daniel Way's run, you see Weasel kind of turns into a sort of a villain of his own. I think there's an issue where Weasel throws Deadpool into like the black box where it's just nothing but sharp knives and he leaves him there. Of course, Deadpool's done that to him so many times, but I kind of want to see that relationship take more of the comic route where it's like, yeah, they're friends, but like, man, they're really terrible to each other.
I think, yeah, he's essentially like, I looked at it, I wrote that Deadpool article like 6 years ago before, or I don't know, whenever the movie came out. When was the first movie, fact check?
Like 4 years
ago. Yeah, 4 years ago, yeah. You know what I meant. But I wrote an article leading up to that, and I really see their relationship as like Will from The Fresh Prince and Carlton. It's like, they care about each other at the end of the day. But, I mean, Will just fucking dogs on Carlton all the time, and he will take any opportunity to shit on him. So that's basically what the relationship between Deadpool and Weasel is. Weasel started out as his arm supplier, and Deadpool will just show up and be like, hey, Weasel, like, smack him in the face or whatever to say what's up to him, embarrass him in front of everybody.
Didn't he also work with Microchip at some point? I feel like I remember reading that. Microchip also worked with Punisher as his arm supplier for a little while.
I don't recall if they were together or not.
Yeah, you might be right, though.
Microchip, they memorably tried to put into the Punisher series that Dave loves so much on Netflix. But I doubted that he'd be coming back in this movie.
If I can interject real quick, in Deadpool 11 from the Joe Kelly series that started in 97, Deadpool travels back in time to 1967, and you see the origin of Weasel, and he's for some reason he's in Peter Parker's high school class, and he's a super genius, but he's even more dorky than Peter Parker. And I don't know, I'm just gonna say read that issue, Deadpool 11. It's probably one of the greatest issues of him ever written. It actually mirrors an actual issue, Spider-Man 47 from the original run. So if you go back and read Spider-Man 47, it's Deadpool in that actual issue, and it mirrors the original issue. It's really interesting.
And the cover is a great Forrest Gump homage, with Deadpool sitting on a bench in his white suit, but he's got an M249 machine gun sitting at his feet, just waiting.
See, that's one of the things that I think that kind of works about Deadpool, is that he's a character that allows you to do a lot of homage and a lot of just, I guess, silly callbacks. They don't always have to be silly per se, but they allow for a good range of motion, because you can break the fourth wall, or you can like shout out to something, or you can do something stupid like traveling back in time and creating a retroactive continuity where this guy is even nerdier than Peter Parker's bow tie sweater vest wearing ass. While we're talking about people who are like Carlton from Fresh Prince. I don't know. I think that they've done a good job in the movie about creating a new supporting cast in the film series. And honestly, I feel like the silent hero in that element of it, like the character that I potentially enjoyed maybe second most in the movie, was Colossus. I think that Colossus has always been sort of a wet blanket as a character. I've always kind of found him to be, oh, he's just the strong guy. You need him there for muscle in an X-Men story. But in the movie, playing into the fact that he's sort of a goody two-shoes kind of guy, it made it funny, and like that he's able to play that off of Ryan Reynolds in a hard R comedy. I thought that was pretty great.
Yeah, and I think he brought probably the most heart to the first movie. And I don't say like he was the heart of the movie. Obviously, the heart and soul of that movie was Ryan Reynolds. But I think he was like your dose of like, oh, and here is your classic superhero, and look how wonderful, like you said, like he's such a good guy and he's so enjoyable. So you had these little reprieves from the insanity into like, and here's what like an actual superhero is supposed to be, and look how nice he is, just before Deadpool makes a dick joke.
Right.
Well, and like I'm not Gina Carano's boob comes out, and then he's like, "Oh, your thing."
Yeah, that was such a good moment in that movie, and I like that because it was also just this little like poke at basically action movies as a whole, where it's just like, "Hey, look, this guy's not going to let this be a sexualized thing. He's going to still hold on to this idea of like, no, we're fighting. This is not about hotness. This is about skill."
I agree. Yeah, you need a character that's like a foil. That's when he's at his best, Deadpool as a character. Otherwise, it's just too much insanity. You need someone that kind of contrasts towards that and reacts towards how ridiculous Deadpool can be.
It feels like that's a good portion of the rest of his entourage, as you will. Negasonic Teenage Warhead, a character that was absolutely nothing in the comics, but has taken on its own life because of this movie series, was similarly like, I guess she was her own little strain of ridiculous, teenager angst kind of nonsense. But I think that her playing off of him made things work as well, because the whole gag about Deadpool is that he's not as funny as even he thinks he is. And so having someone who can call him on his bullshit, even as she's getting called on her bullshit, I think really helped like strengthen the appeal of the movie and made it kind of feel more akin to the average age of the people that are watching this movie. Because Deadpool's not a kid's character. as much as they want him to be. But I think that he's the adult that never grew up character. And so seeing somebody who calls him like, dude, you got to be like 40. Why are you trying to be hip? I think that was a winning element of the first movie, too.
Yeah. And the fact that even towards the end of the movie, though, he kind of wins her over in terms of she starts to like him towards the end of the movie.
Sure. And it looks like we're beefing up the teenager quotient in this movie because as part of X-Force, it looks like one of my under-the-radar favorite X-women is going to be making an appearance in Surge. Although they gave her, like in the comics, Surge, it's just she controls electricity, but she can't really do it very well. So she's got like these gauntlets that maintain the form and the function and allow her to not literally destroy everything she touches. But in the movie, it looks like she's pretty much in control and she's got the friggin' Gogo Yubari weapon from Kill Bill all of a sudden that's just zooming with electricity, which is a neat touch, I guess. But I'd be interested to see how they develop that character in the movie. Hopefully enough that they actually put Surge in the fucking X-Men comics, because, God, I miss all of the new X-Men at this point.
Yeah, the X-Men comics have been an interesting ride lately.
Oh, yeah. Everyone's juiced about the Colossus and Kitty Pryde wedding coming up.
Oh, yeah, because it doesn't feel forced at all.
Nope. Certainly not a relationship born out of trauma.
Can you bring up Deadpool just being ridiculous, though, too? You have to bring up he's counterbalanced perfectly by he does have, even though he cracks that joke in the trailer about, oh, what are you from the DC universe? This is so dark.
It's so dark.
Which is funny as hell. But he is, the fact that he is ridiculous and funny and all that, it's because he's counterbalanced by the dark past he's had. The fact that he is, I mean, looks like a whatever, what do they say, avocado that looks like...
Oh, it looks like a photograph of Utah, an avocado.
Everything T.J. Miller said.
Uglier avocado.
T.J. Miller said in the first movie. Because he's horribly scarred in the Circle Chase, that first miniseries, and yeah. He gets his mask removed in that, and that's the first time you get to see his face. And he kind of plays it off like it reminded me of Spawn back when you first see Spawn. He can't go see his wife anymore because he's just like a burn victim. He's just horribly scarred, and that's the source of Deadpool's power, is the fact that his cancer kind of mutated with his healing factor. And when he first came out, his healing factor was described as being stronger than Wolverine's because of that strange fusion.
Well, I mean, he's had his head cut off at this point and reattached, so.
Yeah, he's been melted down to fucking like particles and reconstituted. So but to bring up the dark side again, he's such a humorous character because of that dark past, and he masks everything that's gone on in his life. Like his dad died in a bar fight or something. He's been in the military. He got cancer at an early age. He had to break up with Vanessa in the comics anyways because of that. Like he broke up with her before he left for the military. So a lot of his character is joking because he's forced to, almost, just to mask his pain.
Oh, sure. And I think that there's been some great stories that have been told about the difficulty of maintaining like that, I guess, exuberant exterior when you have such a rough like lifestyle and past. In the appropriately overrated, because I love this series, Uncanny X-Force by Rick Remender, there's like Deadpool doesn't really seem to fit. Yeah, he's a character from the X universe that murders people, but he's also like lighthearted and kind of goofy, but you put him on this serious, dour-ass team that's there to, in the first arc, spoiler, I guess, murder a child that is going to be the new Apocalypse. Like, he, and like, you get to see a lot from his character. He still cracks jokes, but he's clearly uncomfortable with a lot of the wet work shit that they're doing, and he really kind of becomes like a bit of, yeah, he's still a comic relief, but I feel like he's a good gateway character for the average reader who's like, man, they're getting into some heavy shit here, what with, you know, the death of that whole town in Minnesota that became what do they call it? Like Lhasa Apso or something like that. That's the name of a dog, not what it is. but yeah, that's a great serious Deadpool storyline. And I can't really think of too many other great serious Deadpool stories. But while you're talking Counterbalance and we're talking about the new movie, obviously we have to touch on Deadpool and or Cable and Deadpool, which was, for me at least, it was like a revival of the character, because I had stopped reading anything Deadpool related. It became a little one note and everything you'd expect it to be, and it was a little meh for most of like the late 90s. But then they get like Cable, who also can't sustain a solo series because he's too gruff. He is like a DC Universe fucking character. And you put these two together, and it's just the buddy cop comedy that I never knew that I wanted in a comic book. It was an excellent run for, I think, pretty much its entirety. Did anybody else read Cable and Deadpool?
I completely agree. I picked up the first volume in trade, I want to say like a year and a half ago. I got really into this Deadpool craze. Like, I was one of the readers who, I read a lot of Spider-Man growing up and a little bit of Captain America, but it never really touched on Deadpool. I mean, I was like, I don't even know if I was born yet when Deadpool like really got introduced. But I got into the Daniel Way collection of Deadpool and then started reading through the classics. And somebody told me, like, oh, you got to read the Cable and Deadpool trade. And I picked it up, and you're totally right. It just is like, it feels so much more fresh than everything else. Like, it's this perfect dynamic between the complete stern and serious and the irreverent. And it's fantastic. It's one of my all-time favorite Deadpool stories.
Yeah, it makes both characters better. Like, the Cable sometimes cracks jokes in it, and that's well and good. But, like, my favorite joke, and something that I think about Cable literally every time now, is there was this running gag through one of the arcs that was closer to, I think, the Second Coming or Messiah Complex, whichever one of those crossovers kind of took Cable into the future and away from the series for a while. But there was this running joke where Deadpool was having sexual dreams about Cable every so often. And so he has this thought about, like, them on a beach, and he's like, oh, yeah, let me massage some gun oil into your shoulder. And it's like, brilliant comedy.
I think Cable and Deadpool, the first one, the first six issues, gave us that what is now kind of like, I see this panel everywhere, but it was Fabian Nicieza who wrote the joke of I'm Deadpool, I look like Ryan Reynolds had sex with a radioactive Shar-Pei, I think is the line, or something like that. And that's from the Cable and Deadpool run.
Yeah, I'm sure that there's probably a ton of in-jokes and nods to that series in the forthcoming movie, while you mentioned Ryan Reynolds, I gotta say that I am tremendously impressed with how Josh Brolin looks as Cable. Like, he's going to be Mr. Fucking Comics movies by the end of the year. But, like, as Cable, he looks really badass. He looks appropriately stern and gruff and very convincing as, like, the, you know, tough guy soldier from the future here to blow all this shit up.
Oh, I totally agree there. I was at my local comic shop last week, and there was a guy in front of me who was actually complaining about how Josh Brolin looked as Cable, because, like, he's not big enough. He's not as big as the guy in the comics. I'm like, Jesus, dude, have you seen what Josh Brolin looks like right now? Like,
dude, I have like a mirroring story to that. It's just, yeah, I work at a liquor store, so this guy comes in and I'm like, what do you think of Brolin as Cable? He's like, oh man, he's too old. I'm like, dude, it's too old. Cable isn't the comics. He's fucking like 80 years old.
What?
See, I was on the
fence. He disappeared into the future to fucking train Hope for like 14 years, so he's even older now.
Yeah, this guy's like an unathletic slob too. He's like, he can't do the stunts, man. He can't do it. He just can't do it. I'm like, dude, he's gonna be fine. You're gonna watch this and love it.
Josh Brolin
like,
is like,
seen No Country for Old Men.
Like, and 50. I was on the fence for him playing Cable too, but after seeing Infinity War, he did so good as Thanos that my stock in him has risen for Deadpool. So I'm looking forward to him playing as Cable.
Yeah, man, fuck Jonah Hex. Let's remember,
I'm
that
sure
Josh
he's saying, fuck Jonah Hex too.
I'm sure he
wasn't Megan Fox.
Had to get over.
Did she literally fuck Jonah Hex in that movie?
I think she did.
Did she? She was like a harlot, right. Prostitute in that movie, I feel like.
So they just cast her as herself. Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Like Megan Fox. I'm sorry, Megan Fox.
We're not shitting on Megan Fox here. She's a friend to nerds everywhere. She's April O'Neil.
I'm sorry.
But yeah, I mean, I think that he looks to bring the proper gravitas to Cable. I think 54 is probably young, if anything, to play Cable. It looks like his hair still has color, and that's definitely not a Cable thing, but I'm not complaining about it. I mean, other interesting casting choices. We've got Atlanta's Zazie Beetz as Domino, which is a character that I'm really happy nowadays is finally getting some love, because I've always been a fan of Domino since the real Domino showed up so many years past Copycat Domino. I think that there's been a lot of cool things that have been done with that character in recent years. Again, sorry to sound like a broken record, but starting with the Rick Remender run on... not Rick Remender, because she was off the team at that point, but the Dennis Hopeless, I think it was, run on Uncanny X-Force is where I first started to get like a sense of who Domino was as a character and really dug it. I think that Zazie Beetz in Atlanta, she's brilliant, so I'm looking forward to seeing how she's going to do it. Looks like she's going to be a little more funny in this movie than Domino typically is in the comics, but I don't know, I'm into it. What do you guys think about Domino?
I think she's going to be a great character. I think when I first heard they were going to add all the X-Force characters, I thought maybe it was going to be too soon, and the same with Cable, but at the same time, I think it's the perfect time, because the Deadpool movie was kind of a success in a way, because it was unexpected, and it's starting to get like a little redundant, I hate to say it, as much as I love Deadpool, it's just, he's like too, it's too much, you know what I mean? So you need these characters to kind of the ancillary characters to kind of temper away from him. But she's someone that can give Deadpool shit back. And like we said before, I think preceding this show, there's a running gag before Deadpool became a popular character that she would shoot him in the back every time to beat him. Mm-hmm. So every time she would appear, he'd be like, oh, here's the, what are you going to shoot me in the back? Or he'd crack a joke like that. So they really have good synergy together.
And I think that Domino, and they joke about this in the trailer, but I think Domino's power as a whole, whether this was intentional when she was created, is kind of one of those super absurd comic book powers where you don't attempt to explain it, because when you think of it, it's like it's literally just luck. Like she herself is almost like critical of comic books, because she is the answer to, like, how do they always land these falls, and like how did they not get shot there? She's the answer of, like, well, that's my power, I'm lucky. So I think that alone offers so much like comedic opportunity in this movie to make a bunch of jokes about it.
It's funny you say that, because I feel like they did a really good job of showing what like the actual, I guess, what the power seems like to her. In there was a short-lived series coming out of the Avengers vs. X-Men spinoff, or whatever you want to call it, that was called Avengers and X-Men. And it was these little vignettes where each issue would have three separate mini stories where one X-Man and one Avenger would team up to do something small. And one of them was the Scarlet Witch with Domino, and Scarlet Witch with her reality warping abilities that make little sense, and Domino with her luck abilities that make no sense. But they explained it as Domino can see every potential outcome of what she's about to do, sort of like how Doctor Strange in Infinity War used the Time Stone to look ahead to see how many ways that they could possibly win. But she sees that, and then she can help to get to that point. Like, she knows what the best path is and how it's going to end up working, which I thought was a really cool thing, because I feel like I read this article back in college that was trying to explain the concept of luck as just a heightened state of perception where you're more open and understanding of potential outcomes, and therefore you can make better decisions. So I think that was kind of a neat way of explaining it in the longest, most convoluted way that other people have clearly said more eloquent than I. But let's take a look at the rest of X-Force, because there's a pretty weird assortment of X-Force characters that are going to be on here. Starting, of course, with your favorite in mind, Peter, played by Rob Delaney, a dad who seems to have no powers, but is along for the ride as we go. I think that's a really funny choice because Rob Delaney is a brilliant comedian. If you don't follow him on Twitter, why are you on Twitter? Like it's him, and then I don't know who else. Anyway, yeah, Rob Delaney is playing Peter. What do you guys anticipate out of this powerless dad that's jumping into the fray with X-Force?
Well, it's great because Peter has his own Twitter account. I don't know if you guys follow it. It's PeterW_1974. And there's been almost nothing that has had to do with Deadpool 2 on his Twitter feed, but it just gives you like a little bit of an insight as to like what his character is like. And he's like almost Phil Dunphy-esque, where he's completely clueless. And I'm excited to see if they like tie any of these jokes into the movie itself. Like there's this reoccurring joke on his Twitter feed that his wife has these like all day long workout sessions with his trainer. And they're really loud, and she always comes out exhausted, and like she's missing a shirt. And he's like, "Wow, like I'm just really proud of this trainer for sculpting my wife so well." So I'm excited to see how they play with that.
I love that his pinned tweet is about a swan that attacks him on his day to day.
Yeah, it's great. So I think throwing in a character like that is just so, it's one of those things that is just so unexpected and ridiculous. That I think it can't not pay off almost, because it's like it's such a dumb idea, it's brilliant.
Am I the only one, which I'm gonna assume safely that I am, that hopes to see him die a horrific but funny death?
Oh no, I agree with that. I think it would be great if like the scene in the trailer where he's diving out of the plane, if he doesn't pull his chute in time and he splatters. That'd and it's like perfect. Oh god.
I mean, I honestly believe if Peter survives the whole film, I'm going to feel cheated by it. And at first when I saw him in the trailer, I was like, okay, this is interesting and this is something I could totally see in a Deadpool film. But then, like you said, he got a Twitter, and now I'm seeing fucking t-shirts with him on it, and I'm like, I'm already over this cat and I haven't even seen the movie yet. So I'm hoping he meets his demise, but in a, you know, humorous way, and Deadpool makes a stupid, you know, joke about it and they move on. But I don't know, he'll end up surviving. He'll be in part three or some shit.
That is harsh, man. Jeez. Yeah, he's gonna be in the X-Force movie. No, what's funny is that you're talking about this character that you want to see die in a blaze of glory on his first mission. Bill Skarsgård's in this movie.
I'm fine with the parachute not opening.
Well, Bill Skarsgård's in this movie as a character, Zeitgeist, who was from the short-lived X-Force outrun that was later renamed X-Statix. And he did actually die on the first outing for his team, the character Zeitgeist. So I'm wondering if that's going to kind of be the moment, because I could see him, like Zeitgeist blowing up sort of like he did in the comics, and then Peter freaking the fuck out, and that being part of the joke is like this guy was totally not prepared to do any superhero shit, and now one of them has already died before anything even happened.
Russ, yeah, I think thoughts on him.
I mean, we've probably seen the best parts of him in the trailer. Like you said, we don't want to overexpose him, but I wanted to bring up TJ Miller isn't signed on for X-Force because of his recent legal problems. So
yeah, turns out he's kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it terrorism, sexual assault,
you name it.
Bankruptcy, like everything this guy's in trouble for.
Subpar stand-up.
Yeah.
But anyway, spoiler, I mean, I could see him being used as a character that could meet his demise in the movie. I'm not going to say 100% it'll happen, but I'd lean towards it.
Yeah, I could see Weasel being the red shirt in this movie. But, you know, I am still probably going to assume that Zeitgeist is going to take the fall in this one, because he's literally built to be a one-note joke. But then again, Negasonic Teenage Warhead died in like her third or fourth appearance. So, and here she is as like the most popular secondary character that's like not a part of Deadpool's usual entourage. Oh, and funny enough, Dave, she's got the actress who plays Megan on a Teenage Warhand might be a distant cousin for you because her name is Brianna Hildebrand.
Yes, yeah, I noticed that when the first film came out. Yeah, we have the same last name. No relation, though, so.
Aww.
I mean, if you want to try and play that up to get her on the show, that'd be cool, but we could talk about that off the air.
Yeah, I can try that. Cousin, come let me interview you. Come on the show. Bring some sign.
bring Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, bring Ryan with you, too. And bring Peter for Connor.
You know, if
that Korean sing-song show can get Ryan Reynolds, we can get him, right?
Well, I don't know. Ryan Reynolds didn't even do the dancing for that Celine Dion music video, so he might be busy at this point. He's too cool for the fans now.
Wow, a sellout.
Well, while we're talking X-Force, I also want to talk a little bit about Terry Crews as the mistakenly thought to be G.W. Bridge, who I thought would have been a better choice because I think there's a lot of comedy that can be made out of that name, but is instead playing Bedlam, who I believe has the power of just super strength. I kind of don't really remember Bedlam very much. But I love Terry Crews. I've said several times that Terry Crews isn't always in good things, but he's often the best part of anything he's in. I don't know if that's going to be the case here, but I look forward to seeing what Terry's going to do on the screen.
Yeah, I never go into a movie expecting Terry Crews to be a scene stealer, but he somehow manages to always do something hilarious.
Yeah,
just have a bit part that's just fucking, you're like, ah, that's fucking funny.
There's that terrible, terrible, terrible ass Adam Sandler movie, Blended, where he takes his family to Africa.
I was just thinking that movie.
And Terry Crews is the best part of that movie. He's still not good. There's nothing good about that movie, but Terry Crews is the best part of it.
He's just blowing flower petals and at one point shirtless.
Well, the dance that he does like while he's like humping iron at the same time. Yeah, totally.
Well, that's just White Chicks. I couldn't tell you a damn thing that happened in White Chicks except when Terry Crews was on screen. Yeah. I couldn't tell you one fucking thing that happens in that film except for what Terry Crews does.
That's pretty true. Actually, you know what? That Friday movie that he was in, the third one, it's all him too. I remember his scenes with Cat Williams and pretty much nothing else.
That's right, at the party. Yep.
He's got the fucking phone booth taped around his chest so he doesn't get shanked.
He's pretty good in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I would say that's that's the one thing he's in that not only is he good in, but the entire thing is good too. But I think you guys are right. Everything else, like you remember the movie because he was in it, and then you go, "Wow, the rest of that movie was fucking shit."
I'm trying to think of good movies that he's been in.
The Longest Yard, the remake, that wasn't bad.
Oh, I disagree. But
I didn't say it was good. It's just it's not bad. It's okay.
I watched it all the way through. So.
I like the Expendables, but.
Yeah,
but they practically cut him out of the second one, so. But, Terry Crews, he should be good. Let's see, who else is in this cast? We've also got an appearance by an actual X-Force member, which is, you know, weird and unique for this movie, given the fact that every other X-Force character in this is somebody that's not typically associated besides Domino, is Shatterstar. And, you know, Shatterstar is one of those characters who has like a weird, ill-defined power, sort of like Domino. But he's, when it all comes down to it, he's just a guy in a stupid hat with swords. And I think that that's exactly what they're going to play him as in this movie. I think it's going to be cool. What do you guys think about Shatterstar?
If I remember correctly, is related to Longshot, right? Longshot is from the Mojoverse.
I think they disproved that. I think that the original thought was that Shatterstar was supposed to be the child of Dazzler and Longshot, but I think that that's been disproved.
Well, there's a Shatterstar when he's in X-Force was a very zeitgeist character because he had twin swords, a ponytail, like you said, the stupid headgear, and he was, I mean, as a 9-year-old, he was a cool character. He was pretty cool. But to tie it into Deadpool, Shatterstar was supposedly supposed to be one of the best fighters in X-Force. Like, Cable was always like, "Oh, man, you're a great fighter, blah, blah, blah." Like, you know what I mean? And in one issue, Deadpool comes in. I can't remember the issue. It was, like, X-Force 11, We'd have to check it. But Deadpool fights X-Force in that issue, and he just comes in and beats the bag out of Shatterstar. And it's just an indelible memory in my mind. It really shaped my childhood.
I think that Shatterstar has gained a lot more notoriety in recent years because of his sexuality rather than his, like, experience as a character or, like, you know, his worth in storylines. I feel like they I guess it was the X-Factor series that was headed up by Jamie Madrox. I don't know who was writing it at the time. He and Richter entered into a relationship, and that was really what kind of made him popular again. And since then, he's basically just been, you know, the Richter's boyfriend, basically, I feel like, rather than much of an interesting character. But I don't know. I think that they're very well aware of his history as being just the guy with the swords, and I think that's exactly what he's going to be in.
Do you think they'll introduce it? Yeah, they won't introduce that in the movie. Do you think they will?
Oh, I think that they might, like, imply his bisexuality, because he's bisexual. He's not, like, a gay gentleman. Well, I guess arguably, I don't know. I don't know how to properly define these contexts, but yeah, I think that they'll probably give, like, a knowing wink to it. Like, he'll talk about his boyfriend at home or something like that. I don't think that they'll put Richter in the movie, because if we're trying to believe that this is in the same universe as Logan, Richter was arguably introduced as one of the future X children in that movie.
Good eye, good looks, good looks, my dude.
Yep. Yeah, he was one of the ones that helped murder that fucking all those people, as a matter of fact, trying to keep them away from a hard life, but instead they're just gonna have to murder an entire Black Ops squad that's there to try and kill them. Spoiler alerts, Dave.
I know you still have to watch that
movie.
I'll work on that.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just gonna say on the topic of, like, character sexualities, there's been a lot of, I don't know, not necessarily clamoring, but a lot of people wondering if they're ever gonna address Deadpool's pansexuality within the movies. And I'm wondering to see if this is gonna be the movie where they introduce it. We're like, oh, by the way, like, Deadpool is kind of attracted to everything.
I think that's kind of hard to get across when you have to have, like, a stated love interest. Mm-hmm. I think that the trailers have downplayed a little bit Marina Baccarin's role in this movie, Vanessa's role in the movie, because I've only really seen her welcoming, welcoming him home, like, as he comes in to make that not that funny joke about gluten. And she's like, welcome back, Red, or something like that. That's pretty much the extent of what I've seen her do for this movie. So maybe they're going to, like, write her out, sort of like they did with Kick-Ass's girlfriend in the second one of those. And she'll just be in one scene and then kind of go away. But the whole plot seems to be centered around family, I guess, is what I'm kind of gathering with the way that they're talking about how he needs to protect the little fat boy, who I'm assuming is supposed to be Rusty from Skids and Rusty fame of the New Mutants in the 80s. The character name is Russell, so I'm assuming that's
Fat Boy, enough. Is that what we're calling him?
I like the name Fat Boy. Let's just call him.
LFB, the little fat boy.
Reminds me of that Office episode when he calls, what's his name's in it, he calls him a fat little runt. What episode is that?
What was that?
Oh, I
was gonna say, was that the British Office that we're talking
about? No, it wasn't. I'm starting to get buzzed now. Let me come down a little bit.
Well, one of the things that we probably should also touch on with regards to Deadpool 2, a lot of the early reactions that have been coming out have been pretty laudatory. Most of them have been pretty positive, saying that this is just as funny as the first one, proof of concept for these movies, yada yada. But almost all of them, to a T, has discussed some sort of after-credit sequence that's supposed to be this excellent denouement for the movie. It's really supposed to kind of put a firm cap on it, but also make you excited about either something in the future or just about the experience you just went through. So, speculation time, as this is being recorded a couple days before any of us are going to get to see the movie. What do we think happens in the after-credit sequence of Deadpool 2?
That's a tough one.
Keira Knightley makes a surprise appearance as Cable, and the Cable we've seen the entire movie wasn't the real Cable, and they really did cast Keira Knightley.
Yes.
Because I would laugh hysterically, because I remember after I saw the first Deadpool, I was thinking, I was like, you know what? If they really do go forward and cast Keira Knightley, that would be the most Deadpool move ever. Okay. To actually be like, we're not going to cast anyone who looks remotely like him. We're going to get this scrawny little British girl to do it. But
building off that idea, I want to see Josh Brolin be copycat, and then that's revealed to be, that's why he's the fake Cable, and then we'll find out that that Keira Knightley is the actual Nathan Dayspring S. Candy son.
I want to and this is spoilers for Infinity War. If you haven't seen the film, like, skip ahead a couple minutes. I want to see them all turn to dust, and then later in the week we find out that the MCU got the rights back to Deadpool.
Oh, that would be brutal.
I mean,
I posted an article about it not too long ago, but it was Deadpool and Hugh Jackman hanging out in a hotel room, in an innocuous manner, but they were like palling around, and it just makes me think that we might see a cameo from either Wolverine or another big Fox X-Men entity.
See, I would think that they might do a Hugh Jackman cameo, but I don't know if they'll do a Logan Wolverine cameo. Arguably, we had a Hugh Jackman cameo in the last movie when he took off his mask to reveal that he had the cutout of the Sexiest Man of the Year cover on his face.
So he'll be trying to convince Hugh Jackman in the after credit scene to come back as Wolverine, maybe?
Yeah, that could work. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, maybe it cuts to credits with just the word snicked. So, and that's their way of being like, he's coming back.
See, what I want to see, or what I'm kind of expecting out of this, is to have another sort of slick 80s movie reference. Because the end of Deadpool 1 obviously had the homage to Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I'm anticipating something similar coming that. Although it's hard to say if that was because it was an iconic movie sequence, or because it was probably the most, until Marvel came along, iconic after credits sequence. Because honestly, I can't think of too many non-Marvel movies that aren't that, or the awesome Jean-Claude Van Damme Street Fighter movie that have post-credit scenes. But that's my anticipation of it.
Yeah, they've been teasing at musicals a lot with this, and one of the reviews I read said it, the soundtrack has almost like a Broadway feel to it. So maybe, I don't know, what's a famous musical movie from the 80s?
Flashdance?
Flashdance, which he did a post. Yeah. Homaging.
Yeah, so maybe there's going to be some sort of Flashdance scene.
I guess they could do Footloose, but Guardians already took that one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they would do it anyway. Who knows?
Well, if they did it and Guardians did it, they would probably joke about it too. Sort of like how he calls, in one of the trailers, he calls Cable Thanos.
Right, right.
I mean, he is technically in the MCU now. I mean, not officially, but so they could go that route if they wanted to. They could start to tie him into the MCU if they're thinking that forward, but we'll see. I mean, I hope they don't. I kind of wish I didn't hear anything about it, so I kind of just went into a cold and saw it. But because whenever it gets built up, I always get let down.
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of feel the same about it, but at the same time, like, I wanted to just know that it was not an absolute shit movie. But if it were, then I imagine that they wouldn't allow for the pre-screening. Sort of like with that New Mutants movie. Allegedly, the first draft was actually okay. It was a good movie, but it was like a C+, B- movie. And they're like, nah, after Deadpool broke all the fucking records, we really need to come out of this thing, like, with people being like, holy shit, did you see that New Mutants movie? Which I think is kind of, I get the impetus, but I think it also kind of sucks, because when has going and having to reshoot two-thirds of your movie ever yielded a better movie? Like, I think that's gonna just end up screwing over the New Mutants in the long run.
I don't know. So, we're gonna find out next. Yeah, I was gonna say we're gonna find out next week with Han Solo,
which I know Dave is super jazzed about seeing too.
Yeah, I'm not going to be first in line for Solo.
I mean, I want to see Donald Glover.
But I don't know. I'm not looking forward to it. But we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah, Star Wars, the whole Solo lead up is on the front page of AIPT right now. And I wanted it to be Deadpool. So I'm still salty about that. So fuck you, Pat, on that regard.
I get
fuck you, JJ. No, I'm just kidding.
One thing that we do have on AIPT, I believe it's coming out tomorrow or Thursday. And I think all of us except Jason has participated in our three favorite Deadpool covers. So look for that to come out this week. I think he has Connor, Russ, and Eric's on it.
Yep, I'll be adding mine tonight as well. And there's also going to be a special edition of 5 and 5 this week that I'm promising now will actually be under 5 minutes for once. Count down the five Deadpool trays to pick up.
I was going to make the free pizza thing. Our pizza's free if you don't deliver under 30 minutes.
I told him, like, this will be a 5-minute episode that kills me. I may even put on a timer and just speed through it towards the end if I start running out of time, because I'm dying to get one under 5 minutes.
You know what would be
unaware
cool
of our pizza rule.
You know what would be cool is if we tied you to like one of those Pavlovian shock treatment things. So if you ever go over every time you go over 5 minutes, we just start shocking you on camera.
Just, yikes. Oh, that'd be great. I'm into it. Let's do it.
Great.
So this YouTube endeavor is really just going to bankrupt us. What with all the pizzas we're going to have to buy, and now all this shock equipment that we're like investing in as well.
The site will probably be down
for
a month.
Connor at the end.
Well, with that being said, we are just about at our hour here. I think the ultimate question I have to ask about this before we sign off from our Deadpool show is: Solo is out next week. So which movie do we think is going to be bigger? Which one's going to do better in the box office than the other? Do we think that the Star Wars fans are going to be enough to follow Mania? This is pretty hyped to me. Or do we think Deadpool's pulling it out? Dave, what's your prediction?
Solo, I'm sure, will take the box office purely because it's Star Wars and it's also PG-13, where Deadpool's audience is going to be limited because it's rated R.
Connor, what do you think?
I actually think Deadpool's going to do it. I think you have Ryan Reynolds has already embodied this iconic character, and it's Deadpool is now synonymous with Ryan Reynolds, whereas with Solo, you have these diehard rabid fans, Star Wars fans, who have to watch two new actors take on completely iconic roles. And I think a lot of people aren't going to like Solo that much, and I think it's not going to have much legs, whereas I think Deadpool is going to probably get blown out of the water when it comes to like comparing their opening weekends. But I think when you look at the overall run, I think Deadpool will pull it out.
Russ, how about you? Where are you lying on this?
I'll go out on a limb and say Deadpool, too. I don't have Schadenfreude, or whatever it's called, for Han Solo 2, or Solo, but I don't know, just... I mean, I love Han Solo, so it's just like I can't envision that guy as Han Solo yet, and it just looks like such a milquetoast movie. Like, I don't know, and all the reshoots. So,
I always feel like prequels are just not that good. I think that whoever this kid is that's playing Han Solo, I'm not going to look his name up right now, doesn't really embody the role to me. Like, there's a certain intangible that Harrison Ford brought to the role that you really can't just teach, and you can't just be like a handsome dude and think that that's going to be enough.
The trailer really rubbed me the wrong way too. With instead of saying I have a bad feeling about this, they just have him say I have a good feeling about this. It's like, god damn it, man.
I mean, I am excited to see what Donald Glover can do as Lando. I think that should be pretty good. Woody Harrelson is usually a welcome addition in whatever I see him in. That being said, Emilia Clarke is not the greatest actress.
Thank you.
But we all like to look at her.
She's okay as Daenerys, but as Daenerys, she's very one note. She only really has to do one emotion, and that's righteous indignation. And her shitty take on Sarah Connor.
God, that was a bad movie.
Despite what Schwarzenegger said, where he said that she was doing Linda Hamilton justice in her rendition. I firmly disagree. But I also think that I think Deadpool is going to end up taking it largely because of word of mouth. I feel like it's the kind of movie that people want to see a couple of times to catch other jokes and if they think it's fun. Plus, I think that it was probably made for like the coffee budget of Solo, so it's going to be a more profitable movie.
Just what I'm the only one that actually picked Solo out of the four.
You're probably the only one that's going to be right, though, Dave. So.
Yeah. And I'm actually more of a Star Wars fan than I am a Deadpool fan.
I am too, but Solo looks like a train wreck to me.
I totally agree. I'm going into that movie so with such low hopes. I think you guys all hit it on the head. The Alden Ehrenreich, the guy taking over as Han Solo, just doesn't really have it. Even in the trailers, you can tell the differences between what was a Ron Howard scene and what was a Phil Lord and Chris Miller scene. I think I got those names mixed up, but it's fine. It just looks like a mess. I have such low hopes, and I think it's gonna be Disney's first critical flop with Star Wars.
And don't underestimate the little fat boy effect in Deadpool 2.
Oh yeah. People wearing little Russell t-shirts all the time. Maybe they'll call him Rusty in it. I don't know. That's what the character's name is supposed to be, I'm assuming. With that being said, we'll move right along into our... you know what? Actually, I know, Dave, you've kind of soured on this bit a little bit, but we haven't had Russ on ever, I don't think, and this is the first time that Connor's been on in quite a while. So it's time for Defend Your Poor Taste, where we ask our guests to discuss something that they kind of have... maybe a little bit of a guilty pleasure on, but it's not that guilty. They actually like it. They'll talk about it. They'll let you know just exactly why they love eating the salt at the bottom of a bag of pretzels, evidently, is a thing. Or why they love the smell of skunk.
Yeah, see, I'm not sour on it. I'm just sour on hearing all of Chris Hassan's poor-ass choices in life. That's
sour. You have to give me a quick synopsis of what Chris said, then.
I think the only one that like was legit was that he listed Weezer. But since then, he's talked about his love of olives. He was the guy who said that he ate the salt out of the bottom of the bag of pretzels. there's been a couple of others.
There's some good ones.
He's an odd cat. And then you've got Pat Helen talking about his unironic love of the smell of skunk.
Yeah.
But that being said, Connor, you've done this before. You know the drill. Why don't you let us know? Defend your poor taste.
Okay, so this one is actually a literal taste, and I tweeted about this last night. But I think French Toast Crunch is by far the superior cereal to Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Blasphemy!
I was hoping somebody would get upset because I'm very hot about this. I like Cinnamon Toast Crunch, but Cinnamon Toast Crunch gets really soggy really easily, and I've never wanted cinnamon milk, and I don't like getting bits of cinnamon in my mouth when I'm drinking, but I don't want pulp in my milk, essentially. Whereas French Toast Crunch is buttery, it's maple-y, and it's soft yet firm when it gets wet, so it's a pleasing consistency when you eat it. It's just by far the better cereal, and I will defend that to my grave. I wouldn't be buried in French Toast Crunch, I think.
That's dark. I actually don't really have a dog in that fight. As far as cereals go, I eat Honey Nut Cheerios or maybe some Apple Jacks, and that's kind of it.
Classics.
Oh, yeah. I think the Apple Jacks is probably what I would argue is the better cereal, but more often than not, because I shop at a Trader Joe's, I get their version of it, like Honey Nut Joe's or something like that. I don't know.
Honey Joe's Nut.
Yeah, Honey Joe's Nut, which, yeah. Yeah, I like that. I get it. Those are logical aversions. I too don't think cinnamon milk has ever sounded like an appealing choice.
Now you give me visions of my family just eating cereal at all times of the day. Like, hey, it's 9 o'clock. I'm just gonna have a bowl of what do you know, Cheerios right now, Russ. Like, yeah. Why are you eating a fucking bowl of cereal right now?
That's how I got through college, was eating cereal for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and loving it.
Oh, man, I did that a little bit with my meal plan. I was eating Lucky Charms for dinner, yeah. But, let's move along to Russ, whose family evidently includes Jerry Seinfeld eating cereal at all times. Russ, defend your poor taste. What you got?
All right, first I'm going to plug my article, six things that need to happen in the Deadpool movie, which goes over a lot of the points we went over in the show. Like the Remender run, facets of Deadpool that are interesting and essential. But I'm going to say this took me some time to think of. I didn't want to get too nasty, but I like a lot of the new rap groups like Migos and some mumble rap. And I also listen to Selena Gomez, unironically. So this might come back to haunt me, but let's hope it doesn't.
Wait, yeah, that's your poor...
The awkward silence was that bad?
Your poor taste is just plugging an article that you wrote.
Wait, or, did you hear anything after that?
I mean, that you like Migos is not that weird. I think most people like Migos. Shoot, they just did that whole skit about them on Saturday Night Live. Friendos, as a matter of fact. Also, I don't know why I pronounced Saturday Night Live with that inflection. But Selena Gomez, I mean, I don't know. I know enough people that listen to it that doesn't seem that weird. It's not like you're talking about, like, it's to me, it's like saying that you listen to Cardi B. Like, okay, whatever. Like, it's not like...
I do like her, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, get that money.
Because your bitch want to party with Rari or Cardi.
yeah.
I mean, I can't think of anything G-rated that, to say about this. It's like, where do I... It's a dichotomous thing.
Mm. Well, I mean,
it's either I say Migos or it's like I say fucking... I rub my taint and smell it or something, you know?
Right.
There it is.
And that's the
I didn't say that. No.
Hey, Dave, that's the new cold opener.
We get
as your big daddy,
I'm
committing to edit this part out.
Dude, I'm not editing that. That's gold. That's
Wait
gold.
A minute. I didn't say I did it. But we'll just pretend I did fine. Because, I mean, come on. I do it on the regular, but have you guys ever done it?
I'm just saying, I got a good taint.
All right,
we've been
at this right now.
Yeah, no, I'm going to go on to the weekly picks where we talk about what we're watching, reading, playing, and let people know what is out there that we should be paying any kind of attention to.
Apparently, you're
Connor, what? My girlfriend's
upstairs on the phone. I could hear her conversation on the phone stop while I said that. I could just envision her shaking her head in disgust.
I was going to say, I was trying to move as far away from the taint conversation as we can at this point.
Hey, we all had a good laugh, didn't we, guys? A couple guys having some fun.
Let's start with Dave. Dave, what you reading, what you watching, what you playing?
I don't know. What am I reading? I've only read one thing this week because I had to burn through it for the review to be up tomorrow, and that is The Punisher Invades the Nom. And it's a graphic novel with a bunch of Punisher stories collected in it where he's in Vietnam and the stories. It covers the Nom series, a couple Punisher war journals, and then Final Invasion. And it was good. I read it, I read these stories years ago when I was younger, and going back and reading them now that I'm older, I appreciate the stories a little bit more. So I believe that review will be going up tomorrow, so definitely check it out. It does come out tomorrow. I'm still messing around with Far Cry 5, and of course I'm playing PUBG. And watching, I haven't had time this week to watch anything. I've been stuck watching the damn NHL playoffs still. So this weekend I got Black Panther today. I'm definitely going to watch Black Panther finally this weekend.
Jeez, I don't understand how you miss all of these movies, man. I don't really go to the movies or buy DVDs, but I've seen Black Panther in theaters.
But I didn't have time to catch Black Panther. And Logan, like I said, because we had this conversation earlier, it was already spoiled for me, so I'm not in a rush to see it. But I will eventually get to all of them.
Hmm. Well, Logan's also on HBO now, so you can watch that whenever you please. Russ, if we want to get past your previous comments about your taint, what are you reading and what are you watching?
I'll try my damnedest, but it's going to be tough. What am I reading?
What are you reading, what you're watching, what's playing?
Besides to rub my taintly digest, I'm reading I review every issue of Tom King's Batman run, so that's pretty interesting. The fan base is very divided on it because, I mean, Tom King he's a great writer. He's not what you would envision as the prototypical, what's the word I'm looking for here? The prototypical Batman writer. Mm. Like, he doesn't really... There's not really many... prep time. He kind of subverts everything that has come before, which I find interesting. But it's the issue I just reviewed was Batman 47, which involves Booster Gold going back in time to give Batman a wedding gift for the upcoming Batman Catwoman wedding, and it's just absolutely calamitous. It's just I would recommend reading it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I saw some of the preview pages of it back at C2E2. Isn't it like his gift to Bruce is supposed to be like his parents, right? And
here's the intro I wrote to tomorrow's review. Booster Gold fucked up last issue real bad. Like I said in my review for the last issue, through Booster Gold, writer Tom King has done something so deplorable that it'd make George R.R. Martin spit from his goblet of Game of Thrones fans' tears. So
yeah, but Batpoint, though, they already got a name lined up for it and everything. All right, what you watching, what you playing,
what am I watching? I'm waiting for Game of Thrones to wrap up
until next year. Yeah,
so it's pretty much just all speculation there. We could probably dedicate a whole podcast episode to that.
There are entire podcasts specifically about Game of Thrones speculation at this point.
Yeah, that's right. It's a very saturated market, so just nix that. What am I playing? Hearthstone. That's what I play a lot of right now. I don't really have time to play any other video games, but that's like a online collectible card game that is based on World of Warcraft, which I used to play a lot. So I just... A fun diversion.
I guess I didn't know that Hearthstone was a WoW thing, but I've definitely seen enough ads for it on pretty much anything that I watch on Hulu or YouTube, so reasonably well-versed in the actual game itself. But I, on the other hand, am a Marvel Puzzle Quest player, so my online diversions are a lot sillier when it comes to my mobile games. Connor, what you reading, what you watching, what you playing?
Reading comic book wise, I'm working on an article about Dr. Aphra for Star Wars Month for Avengers and Poor Taste. So I'm rereading Darth Vader, the first run by Kieran Gillen. I'm also rereading all of Dr. Aphra's issues. They're really good. She's an awesome character. So definitely should read that. She's her own new awesome killer character in the Star Wars universe. Watching, like Dave, I'm still watching the Stanley Cup playoffs season, even with the Penguins sadly being out. I'm hoping that the Capitals don't win the cup, so I'm just watching and rooting against the Capitals. But also I've been watching Barry on HBO. I think Dave Brooks been reviewing it for the site, and that show is incredible and so surprised me and blows me away with how good it is. So that's definitely a show worth checking out. And then playing, I just finished up replaying all four Uncharted games and finding my inner treasure hunter again. It made me realize like how incredible Uncharted 4 was. And I don't know why, when it was released, people loved it, but it kind of just was like, yeah, it's good. And then that was it. And nobody really talked about it again, but I replayed it for the first time since beating it after I bought it. And that might be one of the best games ever made. It is just so incredible. So that was super enjoyable playing through all those again.
I'm a fan of the Uncharted series. I feel like storyline wise, 2 was probably the best. Gameplay wise, maybe 2 as well, except that I hated the last boss fight. When you have to run around in circles and shoot
the
blue crystals
so
or whatever.
Terrible. That was a bad boss fight.
But I mean, it's arguably better than the boss fight in the first game where you had to run from cover to cover to cover and then you land one punch and you win. QTEs are not boss fights, but
no, they're poor excuses of cutscenes.
But I guess that was sort of how the boss fight in 4 was, though, right? It was that sword fight, And
yeah, 4's got that problem too, where that, and I realized when I was playing through it again this last time, was like, man, this, it's a good ending, like in a story context, where it's like, I really like the emotional weight of this ending, but the actual control scheme of having to do a sword fight out of nowhere is super frustrating.
I mean, I was super frustrated by finding out just how bad I am at Crash Bandicoot.
Oh, yeah, that too.
But, yeah, as for me, reading, I just read the newest issue of Wildstorm, which I know, Connor, you also dig. It's really, really good. Finally focusing a little bit on John Lynch. I feel like the story's coming together a little bit clearer at this point. I also just read the wedding special for the X-Men series, following the bachelor and bachelorette parties of Colossus and Kitty Pryde, and they are not great. They're fine. It felt like a complete waste of time reading it, frankly. But it does have one weak segment. It's not a bad segment, but guess who writes the weak segment? Your boy and mine, Mark Guggenheim. Even when he does well, it's not a good segment.
It sounds like it's going to be like the rest of X-Men Gold, where you finish it and you go, okay, that was a comic. Like,
yeah,
it's just so forgettable.
Well, I, on the other hand, got pretty upset coming out of a lot of X-Men Gold issues because they were just so, like, offensively stupid. This isn't so much offensively stupid as it's just needless. Parts of it are offensively stupid. Like, I don't get why Kitty still works at a fucking bar. When does she have the time? She's, like, getting married. She's, like, the headmistress of a school and a fucking superhero. And she was just in prison for a couple issues. Mm-hmm. What the fuck is she... How is she working at a bar? But, anyway. Watching Westworld. This season of Westworld is so far, at least, way better than the first. I feel like the storyline's a lot clearer. Which is both a blessing and a curse for people who like mysterious shows like this. But it's not any less, like... Excuse me. It's not any less...
Bless you, my child.
Thank you, yeah. Well, now we're going to keep the fucking sneeze in there. Jeez, I was trying to give it some time for Dave to edit it out.
I could just say, bless you, my child, and you could...
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I've been
impressed. In training.
Well, you are the padre of the website, so... It's a large padre. But, yeah, this season's really cool. Really looking forward to next week because we get to see the fucking samurai world, which I've been wanting to see since they hinted at it at the end of last season. And playing, I'm still doing Fortnite because I'm a basic bitch when it comes to gaming. But I'm doing really well. Actually, they just dropped the weekly goals earlier today. We are taping this on Tuesday, and I've already completed all but one. Because I can never find fucking sniper rifles. But yeah. Yeah, that's the whole shebang. And that's the whole shebang for this show. I want to thank you, gentle listener, for making it this far through our garbled jokes, sneezes, and talks of taint. I want to, of course, thank my stunning co-host.
Hashtag Taint Talk.
Yeah. Taint Talk 2018. I want to thank Dave, as always, for keeping us on the straight and narrow, for being the guide and light in the darkness, for being the terror that flaps in the night. Dave, where can our listeners find you online?
Yeah, because I had so much to say tonight. You guys were so passionate about Deadpool, I just let you all go at it.
You keep us grounded, man.
Do what?
You keep us grounded, man.
I don't know how, but yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, we'll see how grounded we are next week when the solo show happens. So, but you can find me on Twitter at Psychotic, and that's SYCOTIC.
Of course, we want to thank Connor, the host of our 5 and 5 YouTube show. Check him out on youtube.com/ whatever the actual URL is. I don't have that in front of me, but I'm sure Connor can kind of properly let you know what's going on. Connor, outside of YouTube, how can our listeners find you?
Yeah, I'm at Twitter on at Taint Talk. That's my new handle.
Hey, I think I'm gonna do that.
At hashtag spilled out hashtag.
Don't bite my style, son.
No, I'm at Connor79. That's KONNOR79.
I'm going to see if Taint Talk is a real thing. It is Wild Taint Talk.
There's a picture for us.
Hey guys,
you. So, looking at, I guess you already know you can follow Tank Talk on.
God damn it, we're giving Tank Talk free exposure right now.
They don't here, Illinois. He's from not too far from me. Joined in 2017, hasn't tweeted a single thing. But yeah, Russ Whiting, the self-proclaimed large father of the AIPT Comics household. Where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me on AdventureTheCourtTapes.com. That's number one. Shameless plug. Number two, Russell E. Whiting on Twitter, which I have 185 tweets now for like the 10 years I've had it. So dive into that. And since my tank jokes were unceremoniously stolen from me, I have nothing to say on that matter. So,
yeah, man. You should reach out to Taint Talk and try and buy the name from him. I'm sure that he'll be willing to give you
a to listeners. We made a bet with each other to see how many times we could say taint on this podcast. That's why we're doing this.
Well, we decided the dick talk was a little passe, and so we just made the switch. But
I'm bringing you guys ahead. I'm a forward thinker.
Oh, head talk is next. Yeah, but I'm Jason. You can find me online at Felix Lancaster, also at the number one comic website, AdventuresInPoorTaste.com, AIPTComics.com. This is the AIPT podcast, Adventures in Pod Taste. Thank you for making it this far. We'll catch you next time.
Good night, Japan.
The good, the bad, and the ugly taint. Hashtag.
Taint talk.
Taint misbehaving.